VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live and in color. And we will be here for the hour. And we'll talk about everything we want to talk about under one condition. That's nobody asks us anything that you'd like to talk about. So if you want to change the course of things or add on or follow up from last week or anything you want to do, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. A word for all of our regulars. Thank you very much for being here yet again. We do this on Saturdays for the benefit of everybody, we hope, especially our regulars. And if you're new to the program or to the whole industry for that matter, stay tuned. Maybe we'll all learn something. There is so much going on that it's hard to get to all the topics today. And, of course, a lot of it involves taxes because that's the topic of the week. But meanwhile, throughout all this tax talk, we have been finding a few other things that are interesting, too, not the least of which is more records being set on Wall Street, and not the least of which is people are going to work. That was very clear this week. And since it was released in a couple of different batches, but the big one was released on Friday, and the market closed up nicely Friday, that says that people are paying attention, I believe. So I was saying to Adam right before we came on the air, if I had my druthers, we would just put a padlock on the market and call it a year and come back in January.
That would make me happy.
But that's not the way the market works. So what happens from here, time will tell, won't it?
It will.
But this week, once again, he's smiling.
I am, and the NASDAQ, seemingly a little bit more volatile than the other indexes this year, led the way this week with a just under a 1% gain. The Dow came in at 0.4 and the S&P at 0.3, so all in all, not a bad week. For the year, the S&P is now up 15.6, the Dow up 19.1%, and the NASDAQ up 25.7%, with the QQQ, which is a subset of the NASDAQ, closer to 30%. So
shows that the big tech companies are doing very well. If you're a FANG person and know what that means, you hope you own a few.
Yeah, definitely. We own them in just about every client account, but through an ETF that holds them, so we don't get the complete exposure, but it doesn't hurt to just have a little bit of exposure either.
Oh, I heard something, by the way. Speaking of ETFs, I heard on the radio, there's a new one that's been started up by somebody that has a political bent, and the symbol is MAGA.
What is that?
Make America Great Again. invest
companies
in things that are
should
if in the big world
Trump.
Of thing, right-wing companies
gotcha.
Instead of the liberal ones. I got the biggest kick out of that.
That's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
So for the week, there were two sectors that led the rally, and one was technology, which is probably not a surprise to anyone, and then energy, which probably surprises a lot of people. But
it finally broke 55 and closed.
Yeah, oil's been kind of quietly pushing its way towards 55 and crossed it this week, so seen a small rally. And if you own some of the larger cap oil companies, you probably have done pretty well over the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
The third quarter earnings continued to come in this week with over 1,600 companies now reporting. On earnings, almost 64% of companies are beating their targets, which is a pretty strong number. On revenue, it's a little lower at 61%. Still a good number in line with last quarter or the second quarter, but not as strong as the first quarter this year. Always remember that earnings and revenue beats are based on expectations, which have increased dramatically since the first quarter of this year. So even though the number is slightly lower than first quarter, the numbers are overall are actually better. So that's a positive sign. And in some ways, the guidance that companies give when they do their earnings reports is even more important than the actual numbers. And the guidance this quarter has been really positive, which is an excellent gauge for how the fourth quarter might go. Technology and industrials have been the most bullish when giving guidance this quarter, while energy and financials have been the least bullish. I think we're going to see that sentiment turn on energy maybe next quarter, this quarter, sometime in the near future.
Well, the inventories have been slowly working down, but nobody's talking about it because there's so much other stuff going on.
There is a lot of other information flying around right now. And the dollar continues to strengthen off its September lows as well. The typical benefits, this typically benefits companies that make most of their revenue in the United States and small cap stocks. However, that has not been the case lately, as large caps and companies that have international revenue have actually outperformed, which is strange when the dollar's rising.
So far.
Yeah, that is subject to change. There could be a trade opportunity there. The employment numbers came out on Friday, and while the headline number was lower than expected, the report overall was pretty positive. The actual number added was 261,000 jobs versus an expectation of over 300,000. However, 90,000 jobs were added back to the previous 2 months, which resulted in a total job creation that was higher than the forecast.
The streak continues.
Yeah.
The streak that we broke of 100 and whatever months in a row with no month that lost jobs. It was broken in September, supposedly, but the correction of that that was just issued made it positive.
Right. And so
the record goes back on the books.
The storyline goes that the hurricane didn't do as much to damage job creation as previously thought, so that's why the numbers were revised up and things actually looked better than we thought they were looking last month. In addition, the unemployment rate dropped down to 4.1%, but despite all of this, the labor force participation rate somehow declined again.
That was because almost a million people retired last month.
Well, that is a big trend right now, and especially I think that some of these boomers who took a setback when the economy crashed during the recession are now feeling a little bit better about their prospects for retirement and are deciding to pull the trigger. And they probably would have done it 4 or 5 years ago had we not gone through that period of recession. But I think we're seeing the effects of that now. And the other thing is that wages remain stagnant. It's really hard to explain why in this sort of robust job market, wages are not going up. But I know it's coming. It has to happen. It's just a natural result of this type of job market.
And look at the unemployment claims.
Yeah, that was my next point. They remained extremely low at 229,000. That's a great number. The ISM non-manufacturing reading came in at the highest level since the recession at 60.1. The ISM composite, which includes both manufacturing and service jobs, also came in at the highest level since the recession at 59.9. Consumer confidence came in at the highest level since 2001 at 125.9. And all in all, it was a pretty tough week to find any negative information. It was just a really solid solid bunch of economic reports.
I, on the other hand, have the ability to look into beautiful, rosy worlds and find a flaw with them.
Okay, tell me.
What has to do with the tax plan?
Right.
And we are going to talk about it. It is certainly anything but carved in stone. There is no way that we know exactly what's going to pass or if anything will pass. And it has some salient features, but there are reasons for concern, and you will know about them if you stick around till after the break, because I'm going to delve into a few of the areas and see what's really going on out there. Are they really on our side, or are they just the same old elected officials that we have been electing since I was a kid? And I don't like my own answer to that one at all. But stay tuned, because there's a lot of things you can do about it and a lot of things you can't do about it. Just depends who you listen to. All right, after the break, we will give out the trivia question, which has to do with taxes also. And we'll talk about whatever we want to talk about, unless you pick up the phone and call. So give us a call right after the break, and we'll put you at the top of the line. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment, we're going to look into the new tax proposal and see what we can find underneath all the smoke and mirrors. But first, trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call them at 636-7888. The concept of taxes and the concept of politics are necessarily intertwined, since it is our politicians who determine what we're going to pay. Only in reality, it's a lot closer to what we're going to keep. It's in their minds, they're doing us all a favor if they let us keep a penny or two of what we earn. So this new proposal, and I can't emphasize strongly enough that it is a proposal. Oh, I didn't finish the trivia question. I gave Ken credit, but I didn't get it.
Yeah, you should get that out.
I'll get that out. How many registered tax lobbyists are there in Washington, D.C., to the nearest 500?
And the fact that you have to do it to the nearest 500,
that's
means
why I threw that
it's a big
in.
Number.
Yep. I threw that in to make a point. Absolutely right. All right, anyway, this is a condensation of a rather lengthy tax proposal. It is just the Republicans' draft of it right now. The Democrats are absolutely against it because it's a Republican thing. If they knew the truth, I don't know that they'd be nearly as against it as they are. I call it a Clint Eastwood proposal. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's how I'm going to approach this. Before I get started, let's take a little walk back through time. Remember when President Trump was talking about his proposed tax cut? The features of that tax cut would be, one, every American gets a tax cut. Nice. Two, it will be the largest overall tax cut in American history. Nice. Three, the average savings will be $4,000 per household. I could handle that.
I could live with that.
Four, most people will file on a postcard-sized form. Well, wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
And five, the corporate rate, now at 35%, will drop to 15%, which will make us very competitive internationally. So companies will want to move here. Love it. All good, right? Well, that was his proposal. Remember the old telephone game where person number one whispers something to person number two, who then whispers it to the three around a circle? And when it comes back, the original and the output at the end rarely have much to do with each other. Well, this is a proverbial committee thing. So starting with the five highlights, there's actually a sixth one, too, repatriation of profits that are overseas. So I can throw that in, too. And if you look at those six things and then see what came out of it, you wonder what a committee of 535 people can actually do. It's quite incredible. Again, just a proposal. All right, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to give you some good things and alternately bad things right down the line. I'll try to show you why I have come to the conclusion that I have come to. The tax proposal, the law is called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Well, that sounds really good, doesn't it? You can call anything you want. Affordable Care Act sounds good, too, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Doesn't make it affordable. All right, good. Actual tax brackets are broader, with the 25% bracket extended to $260,000 of taxable income for married and $200,000 for single. That one is very good, absolutely very good. The bad, indexing those brackets from here on will be linked to the chained CPI. Now, the chained CPI is a proposal that's been in front of Congress many, many times. And what it does is it increases the frustration of people who know how strong inflation is by reducing the reported inflation yet again. They say it reflects reality closer than the traditional CPI. I say that is a bold-faced lie.
That's being nice.
Yeah. That also impacts you because it reduces your Social Security increases over time. It slows the growth of tax deductions, what there is left of them. It all it does is takes more money from taxpayers. That's all you got to know.
Can you slow Social Security increases down?
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible.
Well, they haven't, this year you could.
Yeah, but all that's eaten up by Medicare, so it's really like there's no increase.
They're spreading a rumor on the Hill right now that maybe Medicare costs will go down.
Yeah.
I see it hasn't taken with you, has it?
No.
All right, the good. We did not lose the entire property tax deduction. The bad. It's limited to $10,000 annually. That doesn't affect a whole bunch of people, but think about this. It impacts several people.
You'd be surprised. There, mm-hmm. Some states have, mm-hmm. like I'm thinking of New Jersey, have, I think your average upper middle income person probably pays that much in property taxes.
And what about people like us and our clients who like to do tax planning in advance? Well, when you've got a standard deduction that you can always get, and you might be pushing up against it, some people pay property taxes two times in the same year and itemize, and then they go into the next year and they don't pay any and they don't itemize, they take the standard. Well, that kind of tax planning has really been limited now. That's one of my major complaints with this thing. All right, good. The number of brackets is reduced. Bad. That's totally meaningless.
It really has no effect on
it's
anything.
It's the dumbest single thing I've ever heard called an asset to a plan.
The only thing it helps is us trying to remember where each person falls based on their income. It's easier to remember. That's it.
All right, the good. We lost the state and local deduction, or the SALT, as they call it. Bad. We lost the state and local tax deduction.
It doesn't affect those of us that live in Florida, but it
not
will
much.
Definitely affect the coastal states like New York and California.
And if I were an elected official from any of those states,
I'd be up in arms.
And the only people who should love this are liberals. All right, good. The standard deduction has been doubled. Bad. No, it hasn't. That's a lie. Do the math, people. It's $12,700 now, and it's going to $24,000. That's not double. I can do that math in my head. It's not double. Also, since the personal exemption is actually built in to the standard deduction, that's $4,050 a person, and I can prove it's built in because it's on the 1040 EZ, which is the postcard that they say you're going to be able to file on. So my particular family, only two of us, instead of getting $12,700 plus $8,100, which is $20,800, I would get $24,000. Okay, that can be a benefit. Now, how about Adam? Can you do that math?
Yeah, I sure can, and it's not pretty.
With two kids, a couple was getting already $16,200 plus $12,700. That drops. It plummets to $24,000. And you know what they call that where I come from?
Tax hike, I think.
Yes, that's exactly what I
think. Now, there are some other things to consider around that.
Yeah, I'm just taking them one at a time, and then we'll talk about the overall effect. All right, the good. Many middle-class taxpayers will receive a tax cut. Bad. Many middle-class taxpayers will get a tax increase. So that kind of violates the first precept of the Trump proposal, which is every American gets a tax cut. If you make $150,000 or more between there and 260 when it goes up again, you are not going to be happy with this. If you own a small business, you're not going to be happy with this. All right, good. The corporate rate drops from 35% to 20%. Bad. Very few corporations pay the 35%, and they have eliminated a lot of tax credits. Corporations are not going to be flocking here because of this particular proposal, which should have been 15% anyway. Is it an improvement? Absolutely it is, for most people. All right, the good. Small business using pass-through taxation, and for those of you who don't know what that means, if you run a small company like a sub-S company, or if you're a sole proprietor, individual worker, your company is not a taxable entity. Rather, the income flows over to you and you pay the taxes. That's why they call it a flow-through entity. So that'll be capped at 25%. Or will it? There's always bad news after this. What if you're a professional in law or finance or acting, accounting, and consulting?
It's any profession where the bulk of your revenue is generated by the activity that people do instead of by manufacturing or exactly. selling goods.
And what most of us do, we have a sub-S corporation, we salary ourselves, and then the corporate profits are pushed back onto our tax return, but they avoid 15.3% in FICA and Medicare tax. They're taking that away. And that is the most egregious thing about this whole thing. All right, the good, property taxes will remain deductible. Bad, the limit is $10,000. All right, good, mortgage interest remains deductible. The bad, the debt on which you can deduct that is currently $1 million plus $100,000 for your credit line that you used to fix up the house, the HELOC. That drops in half, $500,000 is now the deductible limit. When we get back, we're going to have a little quick real estate lesson as to how this will impact the value of your house. And then I got a few more. So don't go anywhere. Give us a call. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, and we're talking taxes. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have a trivia question out there. It is, we're talking taxes, so how many registered tax lobbyists are there in Washington, D.C.? And you'll start to understand the power that taxes wield over people who wield their power over us, to the nearest 500. This segment, sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, call Troy at 662-9794. All right, we've been talking about the good and the bad and the ugly from this tax plan, which I will remind everybody, in case you're just tuning in, is just the opening salvo, the initial proposal from the Republicans. And that's only House Republicans. It's got to go get marked up at the Senate level, and then they'll arrive at something and try to pass it. And I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for whether or not it'll pass or not. I'm not even guessing on this one. All right, so we've been through some of the strange parts, like the mortgage interest and that being limited, but I didn't finish that one. How about those of you who are looking to buy a second home? Right now, interest is deductible on your home and your second home. But wait, there's more. What if your second home is a boat and you can cook on it and sleep on it? Oh, that's a second home. You get to deduct the interest. What if it's a big camper and you can do all those things with it? You get to deduct the interest. Not anymore. What's that going to do to the RV industry? What's it going to do to the boat industry? Remember, those of you who are my age will remember, a lot of you will anyway, there was one tax act back in the old days where they put a 10% surcharge on what they called luxury goods, and that included large boats. The next day, 26,000 boat workers in Florida lost their job, and everybody ramped up in Italy, and that's where all the yachts were made as it was coming in. It was so bad, it was repealed a little late. The worst part of this? The senator that introduced it was a fellow named Danforth. Anybody got a Danforth anchor on their boat? That was him. Hmm. You talk about unintended consequences. Man, he didn't last long either. All right, top rate for high earners, this is the good news, doesn't start until you earn $1 million a year or more. The bad news, as that income rises a little bit above the million, the lower brackets are phased out, which means the money you make after a million up to a certain level, the actual marginal rate is 46%. But they won't tell you that.
Yeah, they say there's only four brackets, but in reality, there's five.
Yeah. Good news. The act is said to save the average family $4,000 annually. The bad news, that's been changed. Paul Ryan now says it's $1,182. I liked four better. Didn't you?
I did, yeah.
But according to, factcheck.org, most economists have come up with the number $800. So let's just say that 80% of my tax cut flew to coop. Actually, it's your tax cut. I'll explain that later, too. The good, estate taxes are eliminated. The bad, there really isn't any except that so few people are affected by it. Good, AMT, alternative minimum tax, is repealed. The bad, for those of you who have been paying in and accumulating AMT, you get years. It's 50% declining balance to get it back instead of one big lump sum. And I think that's egregious, but that's just me. The good, child tax credit rises to $1,600. The bad, there's still a phase out for families with higher incomes. Remember how people with a little higher incomes are getting this big tax break? They lose their personal exemptions. Now they lose their child credits.
Well, they already don't get the child credit, so they don't really lose them. They just don't get them back.
Exactly right. All right, the good, deductions are simplified. The bad, this means that most of them are going bye-bye. So, yeah, it's simple. You just don't get anything. I got a list of those a mile long, too. All right, the good. The PEAS limitation, for those of you who know that, P-E-A-S-E, that's the one whereby as your income grows, they start to take away your deductions until it gets down to remaining only 15% of what you would otherwise deduct is deductible. That goes away. The bad news, the reason it goes away is because you don't need it because nothing's deductible. The good news, alimony payments received are no longer taxed to the recipient. The bad, alimony payments for the payer are no longer deductible.
Seriously?
I am serious. How many divorces are going to have to be renegotiated now?
That makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. Hmm. They want it to be more like child support, which is not deductible and taxable. Why? Child support usually goes away, and then for the rest of the time, you're deducting the alimony payments.
Yeah.
This is going to help no one.
No. From a tax perspective, giving alimony is sort of like having an employee. You are giving your income to somebody else. Yep. So that they can live on it.
Yep.
That should be taxable to the person who receives it.
And deductible for the person who is required to pay it. And it's not. The good news, the act retains the tax-free gain on the sale of a personal residence. You all know that rule where 2 out of 5 years. The bad news, you used to have to live in it 2 of the last 5 years as a primary residence, and every 2 years you could sell another one and get the gain, which is $250,000 for an individual, $500,000 for a couple. The bad, that rule is now a 5 out of 8 rule.
Ooh.
And can only be used once every 5 years.
So if you only own a house for 3 years and live in it, you cannot, your gain is taxable.
I've been warning
people
for the 15 years that I've been doing radio that if they ever read this tax law provision, they wouldn't have passed it. Now they're coming after it after all this time. The good news, Roth conversions continue to be allowed. The bad news, the recharacterization rule is gone. What does that mean? Convert a traditional IRA or 401k or whatever to a Roth, that becomes taxable income to you. At the end of the year, you start developing what your tax liability is going to be, and if for some reason you weren't deadly accurate with that conversion as to how much money it was going to cost you in taxes, you can take any portion of it, any all or none or anything in between, and you can recharacterize it. This is called getting a do-over, and it will not be taxed. It's as if it didn't happen. without the recharacterization possibility, what it means is when you do that conversion, you're stuck with it. Your taxes are what they are, and that is income to you no matter what. And I just can't tell you what that does to tax planning for people like us who do this professionally, tax planning. And it's, again, the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Who even comes up with these harebrained ideas? Now, there's probably, the thing I'm taking it from is about a 75-page synopsis of a 460-page bill, and the last 40 pages or so are little tweaks and changes that don't mean a heck of a lot to much of anyone. But they're not all good and they're not all bad. But I'll tell you the bottom line for this small business owner. I went back to 2016 and I plugged in all the rules as I can find them today, and my tax cut blows in the wind. $8,000 increase for me if they pass this thing as I read it now. Don't trust me on this. It is not necessarily going to be thus. In fact, you know there will be changes. So stay tuned. Good morning.
Good morning.
Isaac,
hi,
is it? We're got a bad line.
Okay.
Can you call us back? We'll try to get a better connection.
Okay.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, wait, that's better. All right. Can you hold the phone on this one, literally? Can I put you on hold so right after the break, and we'll pick you up?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we'll talk to Isaac, and we'll review some things about the fair tax from last week. There were some things that got asked that I didn't think we had time to fully answer, and a couple of them are really good thoughts, so I'm going to be pleased to address those if we can do it. And our trivia question again, how many registered tax lobbyists are there in Washington, D.C. right now to the nearest 500? That makes it a pretty good-sized number. And that's thanks to Paul Livingston, who was our guest last week. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this is Isaac. Good morning.
Hi. Hello. Good morning.
What's up?
I wanted to take a quick guess at your trivia and also talk about the fair tax.
Okay.
I looked up how many registered lobbyists there are in the United States. It seemed about 15,000 registered lobbyists. So I'm going to guess 1,000 tax lobbyists.
You are very light, unfortunately, according to my sources, at least.
Okay.
What about the fair tax?
The fair tax. So right now I'm reading Boomerang. I need to read the fair tax book once I'm done with Boomerang. It seems so simple from what I've heard in your radio program, but with what's coming out in the current tax plan and current tax law, it's just so complicated. Will we ever pass something as simple as the fair tax? I mean, I'm 26 years old, and I don't see our government functioning to the point where we can pass something that makes so much sense, and it's frustrating.
Well, I've come to the conclusion over the 10 years or so that I've studied this thing that the biggest single obstacle to the passage of the fair tax is people who really like it, but they're skeptical that it could ever get passed. Therefore, they don't insist to their congressmen and such. I certainly am aware of the sentiment out there that says exactly what you say, that you'd be concerned that they would ever pass it because it devolves so much power from them. But I believe if people like it, that being vocal and just letting everybody up in D.C. know that you're a supporter of it. There are 51 current supporters, but that is down from a number in the 80s because of so many people who've retired, and we haven't done the push on it like we were back in the early days in my opinion, the Tea Party kind of stole the thunder of the fair tax inadvertently, and they, if they had adopted that as one of their primary proposals, it may have helped. But I'm very sympathetic to your point of view, we'll put it that way. But I believe that those of us who really want this thing just have to get louder and louder about it. So join them, you know, go to the meetings, join the 1040 Club and all the things that you can do. They need money, something fierce, because speaking of lobbyists, they want to get a lobbying effort in Congress, which is, as you know, about the only way anything's going to get done up there. So whatever you do, if you go to fairtax.org and look it up and send them money, support them in any way you can, buy copies of the book and pass them around or whatever it takes, because it is the best idea I've ever heard in this arena.
And you're right about the new tax proposal. It is equally as complicated as the previous tax code.
Yep.
So it really doesn't advance us in any way.
It is. I wish it would just be simpler. I've read that there are lobbyists for these big tax software companies,
mm-hmm.
which are making it more difficult. I mean, that's their business. That's their bread and butter. But
absolutely true.
What's best for the people, for the overall people, is not to keep it complicated like that. But we'll see.
There's an old saying.
What you do.
Yeah, there's an old saying that says, where you stand depends on where you sit. And isn't that the truth?
That is the truth.
What can you say? But I'm really glad you're a supporter. And do reread the book. I've read it several times. And then there's another one, Fair Tax, the Truth, which is the counter arguments to all the arguments that people make about the fair tax, which are all untrue, of course. But that's the best thing I can think of now is money and noise to support this thing. And we appreciate anything you can do to help, because it doesn't have any bigger supporters than are sitting in this room today. So hope we answered your question.
Yes, I will purchase the book and read it through. Thank you for all the information every week. Follow you guys. You guys are amazing. Take care.
Well, thanks so much.
Thanks, Isaac.
Nice to hear things like that.
Absolutely.
One of the questions from last week that came up was, I think, an incredibly good question, and it made me think a lot over the last week. The question had to do with Social Security. As you know, under the fair tax, you would not have Social Security premiums withheld from your paycheck. The only tax we have is the fair tax under this system. You get 100% of your paycheck. There will be state things, and there'll be health insurance premiums and that kind of thing, but no taxes withheld from your checks at all. So a caller asked, simple question, how do you get your Social Security calculated? And the answer is, for most people, relatively simple. The equivalent of a W-2 will still be sent to the government every year, go to the Treasury Department or whatever, and they will look at your tax ID number. I hear they're going away from Social Security numbers for some things, but don't know. But whatever identifies you to them, your account will be maintained exactly as it is now, so your benefit can be calculated when the day comes that you start collecting. So then the question was, well, what about the self-employed people who are very capable, if there's no IRS and no auditing department, of understating their income? I thought about that for a while and said, now, let me see. If I were self-employed and I netted out 100 grand for the year, what would I report? Would I report 60 or would I report 100 or what? Well, if you underreport your income, nothing is saved. It does you no good because you don't have any taxable income. You have taxable expenditures, not income. So there is a disincentive for people to lie about how much money they earn.
Oh, well, to the downside.
Downside is a little bit different, isn't it?
No, I mean, your incentive then becomes, it switches from underreporting to overreporting.
Yes, and I tell you, I have not come up with an answer to that yet. Adam and I were talking about it in the last break. So let's say I'm the same guy, I make 100 grand net. Net of expenses, not taxes. Now, why don't I report 120? because that would bump up my eventual Social Security payment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So every kid from the first job he gets starts to over-report income. I do not have that answer, folks. I really don't. I had the half of the answer that I was looking for by this week, which was there is no incentive to underreport your income.
And then think about people who work in cash jobs like a nanny.
Yeah.
Your incentive then becomes to lie to the upside about how much money you receive, because every dollar that you earn boosts your eventual Social Security income. So if you're a nanny making $20 an hour, you'd probably tell the government you made $40 an hour and get the extra benefit when you retire.
We would love to hear from you if you have an answer to that upside reporting dilemma that I'm going through right now. And if you want to give us some ideas, why don't you tell the folks how to get a hold of us when we're not here?
I sure will. We, in our day jobs, we're actually fee-only financial planners, and we are fiduciaries, and we do not sell any products. We only make money off of our time and our advice. So we always sit on the same side of the table as our clients and are obligated under the fiduciary rule to give them the best possible investment advice that we can give. So it's not just, would this work for you? It has to be, of all the choices out there, this is the best one. And that's why we feel that this model is the best. So if you ever want to reach us, you can call us in the office at 904-685-1505, or the best way to reach us is online. We're at vanweefinancial.com. You can book a meeting with us right from our website, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/vanweefinancial.
And we're also willing and able to take questions through that line. You can get hold of us directly through the website. And if you are the kind of person who does not want to get involved by having your voice on the radio and perhaps being recognized by other people, just send us the question and we'll answer it on the next show.
That email address is info@vanweefinancial.com.
All right, I was talking about the value of your home. Let's say you've got a nice home that's worth quite a bit of money, and all of a sudden, the people who might buy it might be looking for a mortgage of $600,000 or $700,000, and they can't deduct interest on the last couple. They're going to want something back from you. I do not see this as a good thing. What if you have properties that you're trying to sell that are basically vacation homes for people and they needed to mortgage them and they can't deduct it anymore? The RV industry, the boat industry, I think this is perhaps one of the most detrimental pieces of the Tax Act as it sits
right now. It could hit home here in Florida with vacation homes.
Did it when they changed it in 88. All right, according to Paul Livingston with the Fair Tax People, there are 17,500 registered tax lobbyists right now, all of which are trying to influence the tax law and make things a little harder on all of us. So support the Fair Tax, and we will be back here live next week. This is the Vanweef Financial Hour.